So I think we know God's desires, but we don't realize how many he has for us and how detailed they get and how beautiful they are.
Well, I'm thrilled to have Inez Franklin with me on the show today. And this is funny. Before we got on air, I said, how do you pronounce your name? Because it's spelled I-N-E-S. And she said, Inez. And I was so grateful that I asked because I would have pronounced her name Inez. So I'm so glad you told me and you said there is actually some meaning behind this. So share that.
Yes. First of all, thank you for having me with you today. And good question to ask. Sometimes people don't ask. I've been called Annette and Inez with a Z. And there's a story behind my silliness of asking for it to be pronounced Inez. So I came from Puerto Rico to California, and I really struggled with my identity as a Latina woman, and I wanted to fit in. So I gave myself a new name, and it was Gigi. And so I was Gigi. I was in high school, and so all the kids knew me as Gigi. The teachers knew me as Gigi. And every so often, they would ask for Inez, you know, and I was like, no, I wouldn't even answer. And they were like, who's Inez? We don't have Inez in the class. But when I was 23, I decided, it was a journey, but at 23, I decided I need to own my identity. This is who I am. I speak Spanish. I grew up and was raised in Puerto Rico. And so I decided to own my name, which meant I wanted to own my identity. And so I decided to pronounce it the way it's pronounced in Spanish so that it would be very clear that my name shows my identity. And, you know, I married Caucasian men. And so I have like my last name, Franklin, you know, it's very, very white.
Yes.
And I wanted to pronounce my name. I actually use the accent in my name as well, which is such a pain when I'm typing because, you know, my typewriters are not easy to use the accent. But I do that again just to constantly remind myself where I came from and not let that go.
I love this. It's so funny because you never know what question is going to actually bring this incredibly fruitful answer because it's just for me. I just don't want to mispronounce and butcher your name. I was telling you this off air as well. I had someone on the show that I interviewed three times. She and I have become friends since she's been on the show. And she's, I mean, we're texting friends, right? But she never corrected me on mispronouncing her last name until the third time she was on the show and I had introduced her. And she said, by the way, my last name is actually pronounced this way. And I said, why did you tell me this all the time? Because to me, just being very forthcoming and asking and answering is love. Like, I'm a very straightforward person. Yeah. So, but what's interesting to me is, of course, I didn't ask that thinking she's going to bring us this incredibly important conversation piece off the top. But it is, Inez, because I think a lot of us can relate to this identity piece, trying to run away from some form of ourselves, right?
Yes.
You know, or trying to cling to some form of ourselves. And I think there's something very important that you just brought to the table. So thank you for that moment, even in just my how do you pronounce your name? Because, you know, I think a lot of us can relate to that. It reminds me of my father was a pastor. I always went by Lisa, but my given name is Elizabeth. And so my mom tells this funny story about how we went to a church in view of a call. That's what they used to call it. I don't know if they still do. But when you were going to go as a pastor, you went in view of a call, which meant like, this is the final stage. They're either going to call you or not. And so we went to this church and we pulled up in the church parking lot. Now, mind you, I'm, I don't know, 8 years old. My parents have been calling me Lisa forever. And I say to my mom, pronounce to her in the back seat, I will now want to be called Elizabeth. And my mom, you know, she's thrown for this loop. She's like, okay, every time we're meeting, you know, you can imagine this prospective pastor's family, we're meeting hundreds of people, right? And so every time my mom would have to pivot and say, and this is my daughter, Elizabeth, which, you know, she's called me Lisa forever. But I think even in that, there was this part of me that thought, I want to reinvent myself, you know, and so these sort of silly things maybe we do or more important things on the scale that even are subliminal of I don't like who I am or I want to be someone else or whatever. Welcome, Inez. You have a blended family and you call them a smoothie family. I think that's so cute.
Well, we have so many categories, social categories that we break the norm. In our family, we have steps and halves. We have an adopted daughter. Jim and I, it's a his and hers. So he has two daughters. I have two daughters and a son. And then our oldest two, his daughters, married into with men who had children from prior marriages. And again, one of those was adopted. So yeah, we have so many different things. So we call ourselves the smoothie family. So, and my husband likes to make the joke, we have so many steps that we can build a second story. So
again, something a lot of people listening can relate to. I think that's cute. There'll be some people who will take your idea and they'll now call themselves Come smoothie on. Family. Yeah.
I think so. We should start a new social category. And it's just, you know what? A blended family, as blended as ours is very stressful and challenging. Let me just be straight.
Yeah.
Right? Because we have so many dynamics. Just scheduling a birthday party or something, or say Christmas or Thanksgiving, everyone has so many other family members to deal with.
Yeah.
And so smoothie was a way to bring a positive mindset to our family, that we would look at our family and embrace all of its messiness and still think it's a sweet, beautiful thing.
That is so wise, Inez, because words are so powerful. So the word smoothie is, people love smoothies. And so that is a wise, brilliant thing to do. I love it. I love it so much. Because we're new friends, there are things I don't know about you. I basically know very little about you. When did ministry come into your life? I mean, here's the thing. My idea of ministry, I'm sure it's the same for you, is as believers in Jesus Christ, we're all in ministry. But we call, obviously, a lot of us also call ministry this sort of lifestyle of work that we do too, as well. I'm wondering if there was a moment in your life that you sort of felt this nudge of, I want you to serve Jesus in this very specific way that we might call a ministry call.
Absolutely. So I'm a latecomer to the game. I became a believer at 40 years old, and my life was a mess, a total mess. That's really was the birth of our smoothie family, was around there. And within 2 years, I felt the Lord calling me to ministry, which was shocking to me. I was in the business world, a marketing director. I'd been a business manager before, a small business owner. So that, to me, the business world was where I felt most comfortable. Well, but the Lord called me out of that. And so, yeah, I started ministry when I was 42 years old. So that was so many years ago. And the first thing that I felt called to do was simply to be a full-time volunteer. My husband and I agreed that I would quit my job. I actually worked with him, and it was hard for him because he loved the two of us working together, but we decided that my time was best used in the kingdom in that way. And so we started serving with an organization called Free Wheelchair Mission and gave wheelchairs away around the world.
Wow.
And for several, I would say about 2-3 years, I was so happy doing that. We were taking groups all over the world and delivering wheelchairs and helping the founder, and it was just amazing. But in the midst of that, the Lord called me into teaching and becoming a pastor. That was a big surprise. I thought I would just be this volunteer and just do these amazing things. And the Lord was like, nope, we are going back to square one, and called me to be a teacher. And a new believer, barely had read the Bible fully. In fact, I skipped some of the minor prophets because it just got depressing. And I thought, how am I going to teach, you know, your word? I'm barely just learning it. I'm just a brand new, I'm a baby. The Lord took me on a journey. I ended up in seminary, and in the middle of seminary, I became a pastor. And yeah, I can't believe what I get to do today, to be honest. I would have never saw this coming. And the people who knew me before are shocked. This is what I do.
Well, I think a lot of us have that testimony, right? We are shocked by what the Lord has been able to do with and through us, because we know ourselves better than others. But even the others on the outside would say, wow, this would not have been what I would have guessed for her life. We agree. But that's the power of the Lord. I also just love that, again, I feel you've encouraged someone listening who feels like a late bloomer and think, man, you know, I'm 40 or I'm 45 or I'm 55 and I haven't yet done whatever, fill in the blank. And so just even this testimony of, like, I didn't come to faith in Jesus until I was 40. And then here I am at, you know, a later age.
Almost 60, you guys. This year is my birthday. I'm not going to hide it.
That's
because
right.
For those who think it's too late, they can't do anything. No, I'm inspired. Gosh, I wish I could remember her name. A woman in England who wrote her book at 99, published her book at 99. Mm. And the gift of years, right? There's a gift in years.
Yes.
And to me, it's like, as long as the Lord gives me the gift of years, I'm in.
Oh, that is so...
Come on, girls, let's do it.
Yes. That's so good, Inez. I mean, I've said this before on this show. My grandmother was 65 years old when she picked up a paintbrush for the first time and started painting. And her paintings, you would have thought this person went to art school. This person just knew all about shading and all of the things. I mean, these things are masterpieces. And so for you to be authoring your first book at almost 60 years old.
Around my birthday. Coming out right around my birthday.
Oh, I mean, Inez, this is like, I don't know. That is my favorite thing that I've heard in a long time, because I think the gift of age, because I'm not super far behind you, but the gift of age is just something that I think it's hard to even put your mind around when you're younger and you think, oh, that feels like so old and whatever the case may be. And it is old when you're 25. But the reality is, I think I wish that I had known when I was younger how viable I would be and feel and really be in my own skin when I was over 40. I think I wish that I would have realized how beautiful life was going to be, because in my mind, oh man, I'm just so over the hill. But the reality is, I needed to get here in many, many ways for God to be able to do anything with me, because I'm sure you don't relate to this, but I was real stubborn. I was real sure of myself.
No clue.
Yeah.
No clue what that's like.
The older I've gotten, the more I'm free to say, there's so much I don't know. And I'm okay with that. And yet I am more confident than ever about Jesus. You know, one of the things that really hit me when I was looking at your book, Uncharted, was I thought, for me to write Jesus Over Everything, which was a book that I released in 2020. One of the challenges for me with that book was even putting the idea of Jesus over everything into words, because that's a great sentiment. But how do you put that into chapters of a book and lead people through that process? I kind of had that same feeling when I saw your book, Uncharted. I thought, well, that in and of itself is a sort of an undone process. So how do you put an idea, this beautiful idea of Uncharted, how do you put that into words? Did you find that a challenge?
Actually, yes and no. I would say mostly no, though, because really, I reflected in my own journey and realized how incredibly uncharted my journey has been, my journey of faith has been. I reflected in the stories in the Bible and how uncharted they are. I talk about the people of Israel wandering in the wilderness. I mean, they didn't think they were leaving Egypt and going around and around and around. Joseph, given this amazing dream, and then 23 years later, he is sort of living that dream. The Bible is full of uncharted stories, and so is our lives. It's so odd, and I say this for myself too, I'm not pointing any fingers, how enamored we are with the linear path.
Yes.
That we impose that, even though in our minds we know it's not linear, but we still impose that desire over everything. And we know we're doing that when we hit a bump and things don't happen the way we expect. We get surprised by an event or someone letting us down, and we're just in despair and frustration and anger and you name it, or whatever emotion we might have. And that's when we realize, oh, I was buying into a linear path here. I was buying into an A through Z kind of thing. I was buying on a formula or a little map, and that is not biblical. And so it was easier than I thought it would be. And what was fascinating was there were so many examples. I struggled leaving some examples out. So my book is a little beefy because it's all over the Bible. I can't believe it. There's so many stories that are like, look at Peter. I will never deny you. You know, I'll die with you. Well, that didn't happen. You know, so there's just so many things that don't happen the way we expect.
I think that's amazing. Amen. Funny that you were talking about the linear path, because that's exactly what I had in my notes to discuss. Because here's the thing. So the book is called Uncharted, and you say it is a path full of mystery and full of faith. Okay, so in my brain, this is how I think we think as human beings, because we all think alike in some way. We do. We are all much more alike than what we pretend to be. So
true.
The problem with us as human beings, and you mentioned it, the linear path, is that most of us want to know steps and certainties. And yet, there is this other part of us. I would dare say it is the bigger part of us because it is an innate wildness, I will almost say, and for lack of a better word, but it's this innate part of us that craves that wild journey of God because, in a sense, inborn, it's what the Lord created us to do. It's like a craving for passion and desire. And that craving is for to desire Him. That's what He put inside of us. Of course, we turn to other things that mimic Him. They're like a faux passion for God, but they mimic Him. And in some ways, we can even for a time be satisfied by them for a very short period of time because they can mimic the real thing. But there is a part of us, don't you think, that craves that wild journey of God, even though we do want the linear. We also crave this revival piece that I think a lot of us are seeking right now. There, it appeals to us. It fascinates us because we want it.
Yes. I'm not sure I would use the word wild per se. Not that it's a bad one, not all. But I think we know instinctively that there is more, that we were made for more, that there's a grander story. I say this because I experienced that in my own personal journey is you get up to a point in life, whether you're a Christian or not, it really doesn't matter, where you go, is this all there is? You know, we do the linear path, we accept all those things that are substitutes. And then when we're in that, we realize it's just not enough. That's, I believe, we're created in God's image. We are created with a bigger story already deep in our DNA that we want to live out. And so we want to break out of this linear, but the linear also feels comfortable and less dangerous. So we're in this tension of living the linear, but at the same time, longing for the greater thing, the transcendent, the bigger story. Yes, it feels wild as compared to the linear path, right? The linear path feels organized, predictable, safe, perhaps. Whereas when we go into the transcendent, when we're thinking now and with a heavenly mindset and where we're looking beyond what is evident before us, what is mysterious, then it feels wild. Huh. It feels like we're breaking off the mold, you know, but really being ourselves.
Yes.
The irony is that we're actually then being our true selves in my mind.
Yes. And welcome to my word choice, because I can be very dogmatic about words. So to me, I kind of mean this in the best ways. I love that you're like, I'm not sure I would use that word. And we can even agree to disagree, but I get exactly what you're saying. So let me say two things. One, I have felt many times that my journey with God has been wild, like all over the map wild. Like it's been up, it's been down, it's been following God into this very uncharted territory. It's been scary. It's been exhilarating. It's been all that. So it's felt wild, loose, and all of these things. However, what I hear you saying and what I strongly agree with is that we feel very at risk, Inez, when we are living this linear path, this very regimented, controlled, if you will, sort of mapped out path that we've made. We feel very comfortable in that and thus not very risk sensitive. We're like, oh, this doesn't feel very risky to me. But it's actually very risky because we are not trusting in the one who knows everything, has everything, is in control of everything. Maybe people listening have never made a bad decision, but for me, trusting my heart and going my own path, my word, it has led me astray many, many times over. And I've been studying the omniscience of God for the better part of 5 years. Just wrote a book about it. One of the things that I walked away with is I'm really safe in the attribute of the omniscience of God, even though I don't and won't fully ever understand it, but I am fully confident in it. And that even changes the way that I live my life. What do you think we miss out on when we try to live that very regimented, linear, controlled by us life?
Well, gosh, do we miss out on a lot. First of all, we miss out on God's presence. When we're in control, when we're creating our own path, we're it. We become our own little universe or whatever we attach ourselves. Let's say we're doing it to please someone else and they become our universe, or we get attached to our careers or our money or our family, our children. Sometimes we moms can get attached to our motherhood. Okay, all that stuff is good, but we miss the presence of God. And what comes with the presence of God? You're studying it, right? It comes power, there's healing, there's wisdom, there's peace, there's joy, there's gentleness and kindness. There's all the gifts of the Spirit when we are living in God's presence. And when we're in the uncharted path with God, that is all we really have. We have His promises and we have His presence. And we get to really live out and thirsting for those every single day. And we really experience His presence. I mean, when people suffer and they go through a terrible time, you know, by our age, we've suffered. And when we suffer, we are much more dependent on God, I think. And we get to experience His presence deeper. So, in the linear path, if we are successful at creating for ourselves a nice, pretty life, we're missing out a lot in my mind.
Yes, we are. Okay, these are the sections of the book, and I thought each one deserved its own moment because they're all really good. So I'm going to ask you a question about each one. Just let's riff here and talk and answer in these terms of each of the sections of the book. So the first one is knowing God's desires. But I think this is really, really big because I think a lot of us go through our life, we say, I really want to know what God wants of me or wants from me. That's a very universal sort of Christian thing to say. Do you think, Inez, that it's that we don't know God's desires for us or that we just want our own desires over His?
In one way, we know God's desires. I think we may know some of the macro desires. Most Christians will say, well, He wants me to become like Jesus, right? He wants me to obey Him. We know those desires. But oftentimes we don't know His little desires. And I say little, but they're never little to God. The desires for us to flourish in so many areas of our lives, His desire for us to experience His love and His presence in a deep way. I don't think we know that. I think we kind of accept the big desires that God has for us, and we don't see that in every single moment, God has desires for us that are beautiful and amazing, truly amazing, and that we can trust Him. I can tell you so many times where I have said no to God in something that He's called me to do. And in my identity as a Latina woman is one where I do battle with God, and He has such great desires for me to express that and live that out and share that with others and minister to those Spanish speak people that are my heritage. And I know that that is going to be good for me, not just for them. And sometimes I fight that. So, I mean, that's just one example. So I think we know God's desires, but we don't realize how many He has for us and how detailed they get and how beautiful they are.
Well, okay. Another section of the book, overcoming challenges. Do we just secretly wish, or not even secretly wish, I think we even say this, we wish life would just be easy.
Yeah, we do. Well, because listen, pain is pain.
Yeah.
There is no getting around it. Pain hurts. Suffering is awful. The mistakes that we make are costly. And so I get why we run. We don't want to experience, but we have a suffering Lord who showed us that somehow pain isn't the end all. That there is something beautiful through it and that He's in it. And so in that section of my book, I talk about making mistakes and how to recover from them, being careful for shame, because shame says there's something broken in you, that you're the problem. I deal with that. I deal with the fact that there are always going to be obstacles and challenges on the journey. When I became a believer at 40, honestly, my life was a mess. And I thought, I'm going to become a Christian and I'm going to change my trajectory. And now I'm going to have the next part of my life. It's not going to be the messy mess that I've made. My life is going to be easier. I bought that in. And I even read The Purpose-Driven Life and I'm going to live life this way. And therefore my life will be linear and peaceful and my relationships will be better. Everything will be better. And it's, well, yes, in so many ways it has been, but also I still have suffered. And I've dealt with all kinds of things in the 20 years I've been a believer. And so, and I've dealt with massive obstacles and challenges. That didn't go away.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like how do we lean in, remembering that we have a suffering Lord that understands our suffering, understands our struggle, and yet he wants to meet us in those obstacles and set us free from them.
Mm. Okay, blessing through obedience. This one's interesting to me, Inez, because I wrote about blessing in a previous book of mine, and I think we don't always understand the term blessing. For instance, what if someone has obeyed God? They have obeyed God, and of course, none of us obey perfectly. Let's just put that out there right now. But they've obeyed God, you know, they have tried to live their life to the glory of God, to the best of their ability. They've obeyed God and they've done the right thing. And on the outside, they still do not seem blessed.
Right. So in the way I'm using blessed, let's make sure, you know, language is important.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying joyful.
Uh-huh.
Joyful is the obedient. There is a joy that comes from obedience. That perhaps when someone says, I don't feel blessed, that may have something to do with the expectation of what obedience was supposed to bring.
Yes.
And believe me, I know that feeling of when I obey God, then things should work out a certain way. I obey God. I read my Bible. I'm going to church. I'm serving. I'm being generous. I'm trying to be kind to that uncle who's so demeaning. I'm doing all the right things. I'm sticking with my marriage and I'm fighting for it. I'm being good to my kids. Well, then, God, there shouldn't be suffering in my life. My finances should be okay. There should be provision. Things should work out a certain way.
Yeah.
So, again, we use it as a formula.
Uh-huh.
If I obey God, then you will do your part a certain way.
Yeah.
It's a deal. It's a contract with God. Whereas, I believe there is a blessing in obedience simply because we have a good God who wants only but good things for us. So that when we obey him, ultimately, in the big picture, maybe with hindsight, maybe when we're in eternity and looking back at our lives, we will see that by obeying him, something beautiful happened that maybe we couldn't see.
Yes.
And that good does come out of it because we have a good God who only asks us to do what is good. And if we do it, ultimately, eventually, even beyond our ability to understand, good will come.
Mm.
And therefore, there is joy.
Mm, so good. All right. And then last, thriving for thirsting for God. Of course, I thought about the verse in Matthew, the Beatitude, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. What if you want to thirst, but you don't know how?
Mm. Okay. So the whole makeup of the book, I wish I could do some sort of a circle or a ball for this book because these are rhythms. All four of these are meant to be a rhythm. So we know that God has desires for us. They are greater than we realize. So we seek those.
Mm.
Then we recognize that we're going to have struggles and obstacles on the journey. We're not going to get it always right when we're trying to live out God's desires for us. So therefore, we rely on obedience to stay connected to God and his desires versus our own. Make them first, as you say, right?
Right.
Jesus over everything.
Yeah.
And in this case, obedience, right, to Lord over everything. And then in that place of being obedient, we're going to feel parched. Let's be honest, like you were saying, sometimes we're obedient and things don't work out the way we expect. And so then we seek God. Therefore, we thirst for God like David did. My big example is David's in Psalm 63 saying, my whole being longs for you. And it's this desire for God above everything else,
mm-hmm.
which then leads us back to his desires. And we're doing this circle all over again. So how do we thirst for God? We seek him above all else. We have to be in that chapter. I talk about being in community because we do need to do this together. We deal with when we're suffering, like how do we thirst for God in the midst of suffering?
Oh.
How do we seek him when we're feeling a deep need, going to God first? Now, also in the book, I put spiritual practices or spiritual disciplines. I know a lot of people don't even know what those are, but they're basically practical ways to exercise some of the things I'm talking about.
Yes.
So at the end of every chapter, I talk about these ways in which we can actually practice thirsting for God.
Yes.
So I give a very practical approach to it. So it's not this sort of theoretical concept. I'd have to look at the book and see which ones were the ones I put under the thirsting for God. Right now, off the top of my head, I don't remember, but each one of those chapters has a practical way to increase our thirst for God. The book begins with practicing the presence of God.
Yes.
Literally having this moment of like, God has desires for me. If I'm present with him, instead of trying to control the future, then I will start to feel and understand what God's desires are for me. Every chapter has a practice like that.
That's one of the things that I loved the most about the book was the spiritual practices and the practical implementation of the spiritual practices at the end of those chapters, because I'm a big believer in spiritual practices as well. And for someone listening that says, oh, I don't understand spiritual practices, don't get so heady about the titling thereof. Practicing the presence of God, you know, that is something that you can very simply do every day of your life. Now, it doesn't feel simple when you are carving out that time because you're going here and there to carpool and you know, your appointments and meetings and all those things. But in theory and in practice, it is simple. You have to dedicate to it. You have to want it. You have to make time for it, just like everything else in our life. But that is the way that we develop. That's the way that we develop spiritual muscle. It's the way we develop muscle memory. It's the way that we develop in our relationship with the Lord. And that is why I think sometimes when we see people that we really admire in the faith, whether they be older or whether they be middle-aged, whether they even be younger, I mean, I watch my daughter do this and she's 20. It is that they are practicing something spiritually, daily. They are making time for it. And you watch them grow. You watch something inside of them develop. And so, you know, I would dare say that you will give up something in your schedule, but what you gain is this life that you want. It is the life that you have always wanted. And so is it really a sacrifice? So I love that you've guided us so well through that. The book is so beautiful. It is so important. It's really why I wanted you to come on here today. I wonder if you would fill in this blank for me as we close out the show. The mystery of God has strengthened my faith by what?
Making it a wonderful adventure.
A wild adventure in many ways.
I'll call that, yes.
I love it. I love it. Strengthen my faith, yes.
Yeah.
By being on an adventure. Yes. It is an adventure.
Wonderful
adventure.
What
a good one.
And it's like joyful, no matter what, you know, when we're in the middle of a situation, we go, okay, God, what are you going to teach me here?
Yeah.
All right, we're up against a problem and we can actually look at it and go, I'm going to learn something here. I'm going to learn something about God, myself, and others, the whole of creation. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Always learning.
Yeah. All right, friend, my last question, I ask it of every single guest. What is the last thing that you would say about Jesus? If you could only say one more thing.
Follow him. Follow him. There's no better way to live.
Well, thank you, Inez Franklin, for being on the show. It's been a joy. So glad to meet you. And we've been inspired by your faith journey. So thank you for sharing that with us today.
Thank you. Thank you so much. God bless you.
Thanks for listening to Jesus Over Everything with Lisa Whittle. Don't forget to pre-order a copy of my latest book, God Knows, releasing April 18th. If you're looking for some relief, some comfort, some direction, and some solid reassurance that despite what things look like, God is on it, you must read this book. Head to lisawhittle.com/God Knows right now and place your order so you'll get it right when it drops.